place in Mechilek.
Mechilek.
Mechilek was a place that used to go like the...
Okay, I think what we're going to do, I'd rather use this microphone, because if we use this microphone, then I can hold it right up against your mouth, and it'll be much clearer, okay?
Okay.
All right, why don't you start the way you started, the way you said you were going to start?
My name is Max Igo. I'm 77 years old, come the 15th of March, 1980. I was born in the little state Lalik to Ida and Abba Bimsayo. The Lalik was a small town that we have who had his home up there.
What did say that again? What that's Radzivill. That's the prince.
That's the way we called him, Knaz Radzivillov. Radzivill.
Okay.
He had his home up there in many acres and acres, thousands of acres of land. And he had people working for him. From the father, the grandfather, the great-grandfather, and the grandchildren. Everybody worked for him.
Well, how about the people in Alik, the Jewish people in Alik? Did you work for him, too?
The Jewish people in Alik was a community of Jewish people. We had about 7 synagogues. We had the Frisco Shul, the Sire, the Schneider Shul, the Boyko. The Boyko was a shield that they used to go to say Tillin, oil in the morning. We had a member named Petrushka. He used to go around in the morning to wake people to Tillin, and that's what they used to say. Yisru alam kadoishim, Yisru alam kadoishim, stay tov, savoida saboiro.
Now, did he do this in the street?
Yeah. Atmos, I would tell you about Mishkuvai. Atmos, I would tell you about Mishkuvai. Stay tough, Savoy, Savoy, Ki, Lekach, Noitzauta. In the meantime, the dogs would fall on him and he would Allah Pashol, Pashol in Russian. And he used to come early, about 5 o'clock in the morning. He would go around through the town, waking people to go to Tibet.
Now, what was you said there were 7 shuls in Alik.
7 shuls.
What was the population of Alik?
The population of Alik would be about 100,000.
100,000 all Jews?
Yes. And then was a river. On the other side, the river was Goyim. Uh-huh. But we had a few Jews live on the other side there among the Goyim.
Well, there must have been, those shuls must have been very big shuls if you had 100,000 Jews.
Nathan Alpin, his family lived up there over the other side of the bridge.
With the Goyim?
Among the Goyim. But they used to have make a minyan up there in one of the houses up there. And they're observing Jews lived up there.
All right, let's try to place Alik first. Exactly where was Alik? It was Russia then, wasn't it?
Well, it was Russia when I was there. But then, during World War I, the Austrians would come in and chase the Russians out. It was during the war. And then the Russians would come back and chase the Austrians out. And it was a matter of communists, Bolsheviks, Poles, the Yikim, Kolchakim, all kind of a devils. They would go around the fence, written on them, kill the Jews, save Russia. Petlura was up there. Everybody wanted to be boss. Kerensky took over. Then the communists came and threw him out, and they took over.
How old were you?
Describe the state of Lalik. When I was 3 years old, my father left for America.
What year was that?
I was born in 1903, so it must have been in 1906.
Right, okay.
And my mother was left there with children there from previous marriage. was Chanichil, Usho, Marem, and Mindel. Mindel is now in Israel. I don't know. I have had no letters from her lately. She used to send me letters every week. And now I haven't got letters from her for a long time. I am trying to find out what happened to her. And all the others must have perished with Hitler. When I became Bar Mitzvah, you know how I came Bar Mitzvah? We had a relative who couldn't see. He was blind, but a very learned man. He came over to me in Rebensburg Melrish, and he put on the tefillin on me, and he showed me how to put, he directed me how to put on the tefillin, and he told me, if I drop one, I have to fast 3 days. And that was the Bar Mitzvah. I went to Cheder, starting at 5 years old with the Richem and Krimen. He was the one that used to take the 5-year-old ones. Then we were...
What does his name mean?
Yerichem, he was a cripple of 1 foot, but Yerichem the Krimmer.
Yeah, Krimmer means, Krimmer means...
Krimmer means a cripple.
Right.
Yerichem was his name.
Yeah, right.
Then we were promoted to Bill Pibbles. He already taught us Chimash, a little bit Chimash. Then we went to Moshe Luthers. He was a wonderful rabbi. Whatever I've learned, I learned from him.
Say his name again.
Moshe Luthers. There was a Luther Kramer, Nathan Kramer, here in Baltimore. He went to Israel in the late years and he died up there. Nathan Kramer was a son of Moshe Luthers. He was also a learned man and he was teaching here in America.
Okay, now...
Moshe Luthers was teaching Chimash, Rasha, to write Hebrew. And he, whatever he put in into his pupil, they knew. Then my mother took me to Rovna, the big city, 30 miles from Alik. And there she put me in yeshiva and got me day's food. One day I eat in one place, the next day in another place. Each day I eat in a different place and go to yeshiva. Well, the yeshiva had all the beds taken up, but they had room on the floor. So we spread out straw and we sleep on the straw.
How old were you?
I was a 13, 14, gone on 14, and that didn't suit me, because at night the boys would want to go out to the yard to do something, so they'd open the door and the wind would blow the snow right on top of us, and that didn't suit me. I stayed a couple of weeks and I came back home, and gosh, my mother was hysterical. Because all the rabbis had their chedurim set out already. And here I came back from yeshiva. She thought she was going to make a lamdan out of me. And I came back.
All right, now hold it just a second. You were 14 years old. And our mother came to America when she was 14 years old, right? So...
America already, your mother.
Yeah. Well, the thing I'd like to see if you can remember is what happened in your house when Harry left for America and she left for America.
Harry worked as a clerk in a general merchandise store.
This is in Olicka?
Yeah, and he went to roll down barrels of oil into the basement in the cellar. One of them, I don't know, some or another, he got hurt doing it. And he thought it, my mother thought it wasn't for him. And he started writing to my father and he sent him out to Davis and he got over to America.
How did
Then Seder came, Chaim calls Blatt's Pamela. We'll get ready to go to America, and Seda was pleased to go along with them.
Did she?
My sister Seda.
Did she go?
Yeah, she did.
So she came over with Chaim Brust?
Along with their father.
All right.
Who was related to us? Chaim was a cousin, right. Was a relative of ours.
Okay, so let's get back to you're back home now after 2 weeks in yeshiva.
After the yeshiva, my mother got me a mother rabbi, Moshe Zayvus, who was teaching my already, Gemura, Tanakh, and the things that a Jew should learn. And then the war came along. And the war came to our house. About that time, the war came to us. And we went through that war, we suffered. My brother, Usho, he was rejected from the service, military service.
Is this the Russian army?
Yeah, he was, when you're 21, you had to go to be examined for the army. If they accepted you, if not, they gave you either a white ticket or a blue ticket. A white ticket, you was done. They never called you back. But if you got a blue ticket, you were subject to another examination. And when the war was on and they needed more men, they called in the ones with the blue ticket. And my brother didn't want to go, my mother didn't want to let him go. So there was about 5-6 of them. They dug out a hall in the synagogue in Basira. And they made a cover with a wooden floor. So there was a cover made on the floor, from the same floor. And I was their watchman. If I seen a policeman or somebody that I thought might raid the place, I used to go and tell them, and they would go down, I'd close up the hall, and I'd put a bench on top of it.
Did the police ever come to look for them?
But it happened so that Yom Kippur Eve, Erev Yom Kippur, they raided every synagogue and they took every one of them out. And my brother went in the service. And he was sent to the front to fight. And he came out all right. He came home for 8 days, bleed. And my mother baked all kind of stuff and got him fixed up, baked and cooked and prepared for when he was supposed to go back to the army. And he got sick. And we got the doctor from the army. And he tried to help him, but he couldn't help him. He died from the sick 8 days. He died from the typhus. Mm. My mother took sick, and she died 8 days later. Mm. And I was left.
What year was this?
1915, around that time. I can't remember exactly the date. Then I was left by myself. There was a stepbrother there, Chaim Yechiel, who took me and Mindel, we got sick too, from the same typhus. Chaim Yechiel took us on a wagon, he took us to Rovna, to a hospital, and there we recovered. We came back to a leak, our family took us in, and Mindel, somebody recommended a man to her, and she married that man from Brestichka, Stetel, where they used to cross the border from Russia. They used to steal the border from Russia to Austria, Galicia. And she married this man. Of course, he married my sister. He didn't marry me in the bargain. So I was left by myself. I worked in the I used to go in and see the line in oil factories where I could get something to eat by helping trying to help a little, to get something to eat. And worked myself in, I became one of the workers in the oil factories. I worked for my present wife's father. I worked for him in the factory. When the man left and went home from the day's work, I sat around to see that, to grind the grain for the next day's work. You had to grind it, and then warm it, and then try to get the oil out of it. They had a system how to do it. And I worked in other oil factories for other people in town. There were several of them. One was Felsted, one was Glazers. That was all father. And one of them was Machen. One was right near the, so when you come in from the station, the railroad station. The railroad station was 10 miles from the city. And I got in with some people, to live with some people, and they got me a neat job. They gave me a chance that would drop me around with a gallon of whiskey to carry to the place without paying fare to Rosner. There I unloaded it, and I buy a 60 pound of food, because it would be 60 pounds of soap. Bring it to a leak and make double profit. One profit gone, one profit coming back. That's how I worked my way until the Bolsheviks, then we had the Russian Revolution. People came into the marketplace, in the leak, we had a big marketplace, but we used to have the marketplace. The peasants used to come in to sell their goods and buy from the storekeepers, the Jewish storekeepers, what they needed. And that marketplace was no wagons, nothing like it, but people. It was just one mass of people. And they made them a station, build a stage. And they made speeches, and the Jewish people from the league came out to the Sefer Torah. They thought it was a big leak. But it turned out so that the Kerensky became the ruler of Russia, and he was thrown off by the communists. And then the communists were fighting with the Poles. And the communists advanced, and the Poles were going back. And on the way back, they were taking away the cattle from the people. And they grabbed me and another man to chase them. It was just start evening. And they had about 30 head of cattle. And me, they didn't bother, but the other man on the way, as soon as we left town, they gave him a good beating. I was afraid they were going to kill him, because when they called him, he ran away, he hit himself, and they pulled him out of there. One was a soldier, and one was a civilian Polak, also with a gun on him. They were riding on us as we were walking with the cattle, chasing the cattle.
Now you were chasing the cattle toward Poland?
Toward Lutsk.
Right.
From a week to Lutsk was also about 30 miles. One way to Rovno, one way to Lutsk. And
they wanted the cattle for the Polish soldiers?
They wanted the cattle to take away the cattle, take it for the Polish army or whatever they wanted to do with them. I don't know what it intended to do with them, but it took it away from the population. So night fell, and one of them ran ahead of us, and he hollered for us to come that way. They came that way, he had a bomb prepared for chasing the cattle in the bomb, and gave him some hay, and they put our hay in front of the door, and that's where we lay down. They went into the house and they demanded bread, sour cream, there was a big deal. Everybody's got it. They put milk up and make sour cream, and then they make their own bottle. And the man told them they didn't have any bottles. Everything was taken away, but they went to search and find whatever they find they took. They threw me a piece of bread, and they shouldn't see. I gave the man a half of it. They shouldn't see. They didn't want him to have anything. They were, I might have mad at him, I don't know, but because he ran away, tried to run away from him. Then they, when the day break, we start going again. And in Europe, through the small communities, they have wells where they have rope engine, and one bucket goes down and another one comes up, but you have to turn the handle. And they were trying for us to water all these real cattle. It was impossible, and they seen it was impossible, so they told us to go on. Then we passed by a brook, a river, and that's where the cattle went in to drink. And it was summertime, and while drinking, they thought they could lay down and get themselves cooled off a little. We had to go in and chase them out. The hay that was grown in that water would cut you, but the hay that would cut you. And I was barefooted and it cut my feet. And after we got them out of there and we were driving them on the soft road, the dirt would go in there. And by the time we got to Lutsk, I had blisters on my feet. I could hardly walk. And they took us. There's a cemetery, a Jewish cemetery, as soon as you get to Lutsk. And they stopped us right there, and they went and got two or three other men, and they let us stay there. Well, they were going around robbing, or whatever, I don't know what they were doing up there, the Poles, the soldiers. We heard people holler, scream, cry, and we stayed there. We didn't know where to turn and where to go. Finally, we quietened down. And quietened down, we ran over across the way, and we got into a garden. We were laying there in the garden, and we heard people talk Jewish next door. So we got over the fence, and we got into the house. There were two girls in that house. They gave us some bread, and we laid on the floor. Towards the evening, the mother came in. It got dark. The mother came in. She was away prior to save her cow from being taken away from her. The risk she took of her life to do that. In a time like that, when two armies are fighting and running. But then now she said, what are they doing here? Who's that? And we told her they took us to chase the cattle, and we don't know what to do. She says, I can't keep you here. They're going to come in and fight you. They'll say you're spies. They'll kill all of us. So where can we go? She says, go in the cemetery. That's a good place to hide. So she took us alive to the cemetery. When we went over there in the cemetery, there was a woman, caretaker. Her husband died, and she had the privilege of being the caretaker of the cemetery. And I couldn't walk. I was walking on my knees. My feet were swollen. I walked on my knees. And it took I wrote a note and sent it to a woman that was from Malik. But she married me to Lutsk. And also to a little factory. So I sent a note with one of the kids from the cemetery to that woman. He went and the woman came running. She wanted to know if I'd seen her parents. And about I told her, I've seen them when they were chasing us. I've seen them staying watching. So she came back and brought us some oil and bread. After several days, I noticed people go running and carrying things. So I got up from my blisters and ran up there again also. When I got up there, everything was taken. The Poles left their food up there. And people were hungry, they had nothing, so they ran up there to grab some. Well, when I came up there, everything was taken except rotten potatoes. I took some rotten potatoes in my bag, and I brought it up there, and they couldn't eat it out of it. We made potato latkes out of them. The woman brought us a little oil, so we made potato latkes out of them. Well,
you ate these in a cemetery?
Yeah. The caretaker, the little house, made it. So after I was out of the walking on my feet, I went out to France. The Moisk was a no man's town. The Russians on one side, the Poles on the other side. They'd come in and shoot at each other and go back. I guess they had to fight in different places in order to put a ring around the city or something in order to take it. So when I knew some people, was Chaim Grossblatt's father-in-law. My sister-in-law, Bessie's, I didn't know she was my sister-in-law then, his grandfather. And I got to them. When I got to them, they didn't have nothing to eat themselves. But they had affidavits for me to go to America. Mm.
How did they get the affidavits?
My father sent it through them, maybe they'll locate me. So I took the affidavits.
Did you think that was a miracle?
Well, it was something, but no money, no. And there I'm a no man's land. I can't get out this way or that way. Either way I can't get out. Well, they didn't have nothing to eat themselves, so I tied up my shirt and I went into a orchard and I took some pears and filled up inside my shirt pears, and I was eating pears. I had something to eat. And I asked them, well, can I go to work or do something in order to feed myself? She told me to go to Hayrechlis Yeshiva. There was a yeshiva in Lloyd's. Under the name of woman by the name Chayrechele. Dort is at the Sheva Kuchne, at Billige Kich. It had a couple pennies, you can get a meal. But I didn't have any pennies and I went up there. And I told the man, I'll work, I'll do anything. So he put me to work, I became a cook. I was cooking lima beans, soup, with rice that came through, the Poles let it go through the old line from America to send. And I had plenty of food then, I had plenty to eat, I was sleeping up there on the floor, some place. And I could help others that I knew with food. But I didn't have no clothes, my clothes were thrown off of me. And my clothes was, you know, like the very old winter underwear. Well, that pair of pants and the shirt, that was my clothes. And barefooted.
How old were you at this time?
At this time I was about 16 then. Or 17. And then the Russians did come in. When the Russians came in, I find the peasant who we knew from Malik, because they took him to carry supplies. And he took me back to Malik. I came back to Malik, I went to work for the communists. They took off the grains from all the Kmazrazovilov's fields, and they were getting the grain out of it. So I went to work for them.
What happened to Graf Radzivill?
He didn't get caught. He must have gone on. But people came up there and robbed his place. They broke the windows, they smashed. It was a palace. It's you ever seen the movers? Something like he had up there in the leak. I can't describe you exactly. He met a dog had with some bells for amusement. It was a palace up there. Below was all his workers and the bottom. And the upper floor was his living, beautiful living quarters.
Did you ever, were you ever in the living quarters?
He was the first guest. I remember the rest of them. He went to grab things. I remember the rest of them. He came the first one to a leak with an automobile. And all our kids, we took off our shoes and we were running after him to see if we can outrun him. The first time we seen the automobile. All the horses in the marketplace got scared and started running. The Radziwillow used to come out with a cart, and he had one guy standing in the back and one of them driving the horses, six pair horses in line. He lived like a king.
Well, he was the king of a lick, wasn't he?
Yeah. So I worked and I saved up a sack full, about a hundred pounds of grain. But they paid me with grain for my work, the communist. And I hid them over my stepbrother's attic. So when the Poles come back, I'll sell it. And I'll go to Warsaw to go to America. But the Poles did come back, and the communists left. When they left, they took my brother's hay and my grain, too.
Oh, my.
So a woman, that Petrushka, that used to go around waiting to kill him, his wife, Alta Foy, she gave me 4 loaves of bread in a bag. I put it across my back. And I walked 10 miles to the railroad station. And I had a kettle. In Russia, in all those railroad stations, they have hot water. And I traveled from place to place, from freight car to freight car, until I got to Warsaw.
So you didn't actually have money to buy a ticket to go to Warsaw?
No, I went on freights, on letters, on freights, whatever place, any way I could.
How far was Olicka from Warsaw?
Well, Olicka was like from New York to California.
Oh, no. That's 3,000 miles.
That's right.
Well, is Olicka down in the...
Ukraine, that's Poland. Deep Poland.
How long did it take you to make that trip?
Took me several days.
Do you remember some of the things that happened to you while on that trip?
Yeah, one time I got in a freight car with some Polish soldiers, and they threatened to throw me out.
Did they know you were Jewish?
Did they
know you were Jewish?
No. I had a soldier coat on, and I came to Warsaw. When I got to Warsaw, I had an address.
Now, this whole time you were traveling alone.
Alone. When I came to Warsaw, I had an address to a man who was from a leak, and he lived in Warsaw. And they told me that I could stay in his place. Well, I find this place. And when I find this place, I came in, I told him who I was. He says, he ain't got no place for me. I got immigrants all over the place. They're sleeping on the floor, everywhere. There isn't a place where I can take you in. So I asked him, where can I go? He said, there's a shoemaker across the street. He takes in immigrants. Go see if you can get anybody.
You still didn't have any money?
It was during the evening. It was like evening. And the street cars were gone and thrown the sparks. It was snowing, thousands of snow. And the sparks were coming from the wires, from the street cars. And I got over there, and Warsaw, the places are built straight, but inside they're built round. And there is a yard, a big yard, for all the tenants. Many tenants live in the one, like a tenement house, but it's round. And before you go in, you have to pull up a bell. And then the watchman comes, and you have to tell him what you come there for before he invites you in. And I told him I'm looking for the shoemaker. He let me in. I went up crawled up the back hallway, back steps. I crawled up and I seen a crack, a light through a crack, the door. And I knocked on the door and they opened the door for me. I came in. She says, what do I want? And I told them, I'm going to America. I'm going to, looking for a place to stay. She says, she ain't got no place for me. She don't have any room. And I didn't. I turned around, no alternative, turned around to go out. And tears were coming from my eyes, but I'm crying. Tears were coming down my cheeks. And all of a sudden I hear somebody yell, keep my help, keep the reach, come back, come back. If your mother would get out from her grave, she'd die again looking at you. She recognized the family voice. She was her little, but she lived in Lutsk for a long time. But she knew the family, and through the family voice, she recognized me. She says to the woman, I'll take him in my room. She has already got the money from America, which have a room for herself. I'll take him in my room. He don't go no farther. He stays right here. Then said Lawyer's wife. So I took off my effort of the bread was left over and I rested up for the night. Tomorrow morning I went to look for a rich relative, Chasky Sergej, who was my Mita's son-in-law.
But right now you didn't have any money?
No, not a penny. He ran away with the Austrians. He was a big businessman, Malik, too. But he ran away with the Austrians, and he became a big businessman there, too, in Bowser. He was a very wealthy man in Bowser. When I find his place, I went around asking and asking and asking, and I find him. And when I find his place, I came in. She looked at me. She says, what's this to do? What are you doing here? I told her, I'm going to America. She says, how? Well, I came here to ask you to give me enough money to send a telegram to my father. First of all, she told one of our servants to take me in and feed me. They took me into a dining room and they gave me a good meal. She said, then she came in and she says, you come tomorrow, I'll tell my husband. Tomorrow I came, she had the brothers for me to send a telegram. I went to Ayas, the Hebraic Society, and I gave them the, but she gave me the money, and they sent away a telegram. And I sat up there 6 months. I asked for $250 I needed. And I sat up there waiting. My father didn't matter. My brother just got married. And my sister, I guess, didn't have it either.
How are you?
But they all got together, but at the bar, or what they did, they sent me the $250. I waited 6 months.
Well, where did you wait 6 months?
I made all my papers. I had to make my passport up there in Bowser because I had my birth certificate and I had the affidavits. So I went and I made. In the meantime, I made all my papers and everything prepared. And when the money came, the first thing I did is bought my ticket. And the second thing, I paid off the woman where I stayed. And the time came, we went to Danzig. They took us to Danzig.
How did you go to Danzig?
They took us by train. And from there we went, we got a boat, we came to America, and
Was Danzig in Poland or Germany?
Poland. It was, I believe, a neutral place. Neutral it was. Some or another, they had some arrangement, but neutral. The Germans had control over it. Because I started to yell that I want a boat with four chimneys. This one only got one chimney. So the German restrained me quick.
Why did you want four chimneys?
I thought four chimneys are better boat. There was a freight boat that they captured, from the Germans captured from the Russians, and then America captured it during the war. Well, I came to America.
Now, wait a minute. No, but I want to know about the trip.
I came to Boston.
I don't want to know about that yet. Let's save that. I want to know about the trip across on the boat. Do you remember the name of the boat?
The name of the boat was Manchuria.
Manchuria.
Right. Okay. And they took us to Deer Island, New Boston.
All right, wait a minute, Max. Hold it just a second. I think we're almost... Yeah, we still have a little bit more. That's it. I'm going to turn the tape. Hold it just a second. Now, talk about the trip on the Manchuria.
Well, we were just on the boat, and the boat was rocking up and down.
Where did you sleep?
We slept in there below.
But did you have a bed or a bunk or what?
A bunk. We slept up there, and they fed us on the boat.
Was it a good trip?
It was the best sleep, but it was a sleep. I came to America.
Was the boat crowded?
Yes, but a lot of people came, Then they came to the Deer Island, New Boston, and they quarantined us because somebody was sick on the boat. And they stayed in their office on the island. And I sent the telegram to my father that I need enough money to go from Boston to Baltimore. And I got enough money to get rich.
Well, did you land in Boston?
I landed on the Deer Island, New Boston. Then they took us on Bowser from the Deer Island, pulled by tugboat to Boston. The name of the tugboat was Money Talk. I went right away, Money Talk. When I came in the railroad station, the first time I was in the pilot station.
In Boston. How did you feel about it?
Things I thought to you. We used to think that it's back here. But,
you took a train.
I didn't have to tell you. And then they took up the different train. While I was in the railroad station, I had a few other friends left. I ran over and I put down some money. They gave me two of those big green bananas. And I bought three of them on the train. And I got those sweet bananas, very sweet. And
was that your first banana?
Yes. I've never had a banana before in my life. And the time was after the new station, after the island broke from there, and I seen people go and I followed them. I came after the new station, and as soon as I came back, I knew my brother, Pittsburgh. I recognized my brother.
Oh.
It was